RPG Lessons Learned. When the game is over, when your players are gone, that's when lessons are learned. We're at RPGLL Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, rpglpodcast@gmail.com, and check us out online at rpglessonslearned.com.
Hi, welcome to RPG Lessons Learned, the show where you can learn from our mistakes. And with me, as usual, is Tanner. Hi, Tanner.
Hey, Dusty. How you been?
You know, I'd complain if anything was less than perfect.
There you go.
So today we're talking about an adventure that I ran you through, another Hex dungeon. Don't worry if you're following at home and you're like, oh my God, another one. It's our last for now.
For now.
It's our last that we've currently run. The next episode that we record will have nothing to do with Hex dungeons. Have no fear. But this was our fourth together, my third time running it. And this one was Christmas-based. All right, Tanner, right out of the gate, how'd we do it hitting your checklist?
Oh, yeah, let's hit it. All right, so multiple factions. So the sort of story for this one was that something terrible has happened in Santa's workshop. And you realize that there's been invaders from a sort of alternate mirror dimension from Krampus and all of his minions. And so you had two factions. You had your Christmas elves and you had your Krampus orcs, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Things to talk to, things to fight. Yeah, definitely. There wasn't much reason to like want to fight the elves, but the orcs and the goblinoids and stuff, definitely you could fight. And yeah, you could talk to the elf survivors that I ran into.
There kind of was a reason to fight the elves. Do you want me to tell you about that?
Yeah, sure.
So when they uncovered this mirror into a mirror universe, Santa was actually the first to use it, not Krampus. And Santa, from his point of view, rescued some goblins. So he has elves working in his toy shop. Krampus has goblins toiling away in his coal mine. So the dungeon is a big like mirror image flip where seven of the rooms are Santa's workshop and seven are Krampus's coal mines. And they are mirror images of each other. And the impetus to fight the elves or to fight Santa was that Santa had essentially been trying to, for lack of a better term, gentrify these goblins. He'd gone through the mirror first. He, from his point of view, had rescued some goblins, but here are all these goblins that have been brought through a while ago, and they're dressed in these bright red and green felt outfits doing forced labor in the toy workshop. And Santa thinks he's like gentrifying / civilizing these goblins, but in reality, of course, he's simply abducting them, and is making them do forced labor. So there was it's hard to find. It wouldn't be obvious to kids. Kids would just fight the goblins and the hobgoblins and obviously would side with the elves. But if you look a little bit deep, I wanted to make sure there was a good reason to side with the goblins if you wanted to.
Yeah, and I was playing my same character from last time, Fife, the elf. And I think the tack I sort of tried to take with his character was that he was deeply protective of his kinfolk, other elves, right? So like that's sort of the thing I latched onto to want to do. So I think if you had a different character who was looking for different things, they definitely could have ended up with that conclusion. But I think Fife saw elves in danger and he was kind of looking to look out for them.
Not only that, but the first time you ran into hobgoblins, we've had several episodes talking about reaction rolls going well. You actually had a reaction roll go very poorly. Yeah. It wasn't a 2, but it was like a 4 on the 2d6. So,
yep. And that's that's part of the fun of the game. The dice have their own idea of what's going on, and that kind of dictates how things move forward. Yeah, that's cool. Point number 3, items, traps, puzzles to interact with. I would give this a big thumbs up. This was sort of the crux of the adventure, and the definitely the coolest part of it for me was the fact that in the middle of this Hex dungeon, you had a mirror to the other side of, you know, the dark, twisted version of Santa's workshop, which was Krampus's workshop. And the interacting with my the mirror room puzzle and sort of the other, my mirror self and stuff, like that was so cool. I had a huge grin on my face the whole time we were doing that.
Awesome. So items, traps, puzzles, check.
And then finally, yeah, something you should probably run from. I don't know about this one. I think You're shaking your head. No, I felt pretty powerful for this whole thing. And I think me and my shadow double, we showed up to Krampus and I think we just kind of smoked his ass.
You did. I think you shared with me at one point that you were down to like a couple hit points.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. It was a hard fought thing, but at no point did I feel like I'm like, oh, I got to get out of here. Right.
No. Yeah. The only thing that was close to something to run from was a room that you actually didn't go to. So the mirror image to Santa's stables where he keeps his reindeer was Krampus's wolf kennel where he keeps his wolves for his dog sled. And you didn't go in that room, but if you would have gone in that room, you would have died. There were 12 wolves in there that would have been a heck of a fight.
Yep. Well, I'm glad I didn't run into it, and I'm glad you have it in there. You know, if someone else decides to poke their head in there, hopefully they get the message and say, yeah, actually, you know what? I don't need to go in there.
Yeah, hey, maybe listen at the door before you open it, hear all the growling and snarling, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there kind of was a thing to run from, but it was not wandering the dungeon.
Yeah, so I think that's okay. I mean, you got to mix it up a little bit. If we're doing, otherwise it's too formulaic with what we've done before, right? So I'm fine with it. Yeah.
So the whole mirror realm concept, I'm going to describe this puzzle briefly for those listening. So when Tanner's character Fife found the mirror, there was a hobgoblin on the other side. And in my view, I didn't want to do like elves and orcs or opposed, so I decided hobgoblin would be more fun. So there was a hobgoblin on the other side of the mirror that was mirroring everything he was doing. So Tanner couldn't walk through the mirror because Mirror Tanner was doing the same things he was doing. So if he tried to push through with his hand, so would Mirror Tanner, and their hands would just meet in the middle. If he tries to hit it with his weapon, so would Mirror Tanner, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So you couldn't get through. I will tell you, audience, the solution. I didn't have like one solution in mind. I wanted it to be open-ended. And the open-ended thing that I came up with was if you do something that your mirror self can't do. So Mirror Tanner had like a war hammer or a war pick instead of a sword. So if Tanner would have taken his sword and like cut something, that war pick wouldn't have done that. So Mirror Tanner would not have been able to replicate that.
And the spell would have been broken, right?
And then you two would no longer be exact mirror images. Now you're doing different things and you could step through or he could step through or both. The way you accidentally broke it is you grabbed a hobgoblin corpse on your side of the mirror and dragged it over.
Yeah, so I thought that it had something to do with the fact that they were all covered in soot from the coal mining they were doing on the other side. So I thought the soot was the magical thing that let them pass through. But nope.
Yeah. The thing that let you pass was when you held up that corpse. Well, that corpse came from that other side. So he didn't have anything to hold up.
Right.
So that's when he was confused and all of a sudden you're not mirroring each other anymore. So that was the solution. So now that I've shared that with you, Tanner, because I don't think you knew that until this moment. Now that I've shared that with you, how was the mirror puzzle? Was it the right level of open-ended puzzle? Was it too open-ended? Was it too puzzly?
I thought it was just the right level of open-ended. It was just open-ended enough that I didn't actually need to figure out what was going on to solve it. I mean, does that frustrate you at all? I mean, like, it's a very clever idea, but like, did it frustrate you when I kind of bumbled my way through it and I went, oh, okay, I guess that was it. And then I kind of walked through.
When you were like, in my head, it's the ashes for like 10 seconds. I was like, man, but then 10 seconds later, I was like, you know, it's kind of cool that he doesn't know why.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know what, I, Tanner, go through my life not knowing why about so many things. And, you know, that's just part, you know, like a puzzle, a question, a dungeon to be solved. Sometimes it's kind of fun when you just, something's mysterious and you go, okay. I could tell that no matter what was happening, I knew that you, Dusty, had the logic of what was going on. So I knew that you weren't just being like, oh, I'm just going to kind of fart around until Tanner does something interesting and then I'll let him through. Like, that's not the kind of GM you are. There are no GMs like that out there and I don't like playing with them, but like, I'm glad that you had a, you know, an actual method to get through. I think it's really, really cool.
Yeah. I had really clear rules in my head and I was hoping it would work, and it really did work, of having a solution in my head, but having it be so open-ended that there were literally infinite solutions lying all around you.
And I think that's the best. I mean, one of the sort of OSR principles that you could apply to lots of things, but certainly to puzzles, is that like you should create an interesting thing, or but like don't give them, like don't plan on a way to overcome it, right? Create the obstacle, don't create the routes to overcome it. And that way you get all sorts of these very cool things. Like one of the, I saw in like some blog one time where it's like, here's an example of it. There's a treasure chest that's completely indestructible and it will only open if it is in free fall for 10 seconds. How do you do that? Like that's, and as the GM, maybe you have some idea, but you're like, I don't know, that's the player's problem to figure out. And then you wait for them to find something interesting and funny and plausible. And then maybe you require a roll to see if it works. Maybe you just think it's a good idea and you let it work. And then they open it up and everyone had a good time.
So 10 seconds, 9.8 meters per second per second. Even if it was just 9.8 meters per second, that's still almost 100 meters. I think any, but obviously it's per second, so it'd be even higher than that. I think any treasure chest would open after being in free fall for 10 seconds.
I'm sure it would, yeah. Another one I saw was that, like another cool idea was there's like a magical sword in a pool of water, like in like 10 foot deep water, but when you touch it, it magically glues your hand to it and you can't escape. So you have like, you know, however long you can hold your breath, maybe your friends get air bladders and bring it down to you while you try to figure, like that kind of open-ended puzzle-y type thing, I think works so well for the style of game that we like to play. So I big thumbs up for me on that one.
Cool. I'm leaving that one alone then. So interacting with your mirror self, I did a reaction roll here. I love the idea, frankly, of you fighting your mirror self.
Of course.
And it was kind of that in my head was this encounter, is that once you break the spell where you're mirroring each other, then, you know, it puts a challenge on the GM, but it like makes the GM quickly have to roll up a character or roll up an NPC that has very similar stats and a very similar combat style. And kind of like, you know, in video games where one of the bosses is you, but like, yeah, like a darker version of you. I love the idea of you fighting yourself, but I did reaction rolls. You did not get a super high reaction roll, but you got just like into the positive side. So if you remember, he was like very Ethan. We named him, by the way,
which is five backwards.
Yeah. Oh, Ethith. But Ethith was curious about you and interested in you because the reaction roll was positive.
Yeah.
But boy, if you would have made the wrong move.
Oh, sure, yeah. But once I saw that reaction roll, I didn't see the roll, but I saw the effects of the roll, I knew that like I wanted to team up with this guy and take down Krampus. And that was really cool. It was like a buddy cop movie with myself, which for a one-on-one game is awesome, you know.
How great would it be to meet the badass version of yourself?
Well, you don't think I'm the badass version of myself?
I mean, I'm talking about Fife.
Oh, yeah, Fife. Yeah, maybe Fife is the dark reflection. Maybe Efif's the real one.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So interacting with your mirror self overall, because in room after room, he helped you in combats. Like all of a sudden, the game. I think that's a good point, by the way. You said you didn't feel in danger. When I gave you Fife to fight alongside you, and I had already done all the solo rules to make it easy for one PC, and now that PC has an ally.
Who is me again? Like literally, yeah.
Yeah, maybe there's something I can think about there. Like maybe if have a note that says if they team up with themselves, twice as many enemies or something like that. But that feels a little swingy.
Maybe you could just have it. It's a little bit stricter and harder to ally with them. Maybe, maybe like, you know, you can have some note in there where it's like the mirror version won't ally unless they get a 9 or higher on a reaction roll and the PCs do this, and this to immediately appease them or something like that. Cause I like the idea that you can be clever and become overpowered. Like I like that kind of thing.
I like that idea. And here's why. The other idea I had for your mirror self was that if you go through the mirror at the same time, that everything you do on Krampus's side, he's doing on Santa's side. So if you go slaughter a bunch of hobgoblins on Krampus's side, you'll come back and find that your mirror self has slaughtered a bunch of elves.
Right.
So I should have like roll a reaction roll and then have a range of things that could happen.
Yeah. It just, or even just leave to the GM, like, hey, this is a dark mirror. Here's like three possible ideas you could have with it. Pick whatever sounds interesting and run with that, you know?
Ooh, I'm going to add that. That's really fun.
Yeah.
All right. So you seemed, frankly, to run out of steam on this one. Now, part of that was you immediately gave me feedback after we finished playing, because I do that. I ask for feedback, and so do you immediately after the game. And you were like, man, your room descriptions were really long. And as soon as you said it, I was like, they were. They were really long. I was trying to do this cute thing where I wanted to not name the room and just like describe it and have you figure it out. But looking back, I would just be like, you're in a workshop, instead of being like, there's lots of wood and sawdust and tools and half finished toys. I think you're in a workshop and you see some half finished toys and just don't even mention the tools. They're implied to be there, would have been smarter. Is that why you ran out of steam, or was the dungeon too big?
No, I don't think the dungeon was too big. I think so. First off, this is the fourth Hex dungeon we've done in a row, and we did these pretty tight back to back. I think we did all four of these within like a span of like 2 months or something like that. So, I mean, I was just sort of ready to move on from the format at this point. You know, I feel like we had tested it and we figured out the good stuff and the bad stuff. And we had talked about mystery games, and I kind of wanted to run a mystery afterwards. So I was just kind of ready to be done with it, but that's just kind of my personality. I'm kind of always like excited for the next thing a little bit too much, you know. But yeah, so once I pretty thoroughly explored the near side of the dungeon, Santa's Workshop, and then once I realized that the far side was just going to be everything I did but again in sootier and eviler, that definitely, like, the pacing of that was like, okay, like, I go into this room, I think by the end we were kind of just like, yeah, just talk about what you do and I'll require a role if I need to or something like that. So yeah, maybe that was part of it. The descriptions thing, this is a good tip. My favorite thing to do with a description is to end with the most interesting thing that they're probably going to want to interact with immediately, right? So you can say, yeah, you're in a workshop, there are discarded tools, everything is array, or, you know, in disarray, big wooden benches, half-built toys, light streaming through the windows, and in front of you there's a dead elf. Boom. That's a call to action. Players are instantly going to want to be like, oh, dead elf. But if you start and say, you see an elf corpse savaged in front of you, the rest of the room is a workshop and there's this, that, that. Like, I don't know, maybe it's just me and my ADHD, but like, my brain turns off. I'm like, I got to know about the thing on the floor. And like, it's hard to listen when you're theorizing at the same time, right? So I always try to leave off the most interesting descriptions for last and just give them enough of an idea of what's there. And then if they want to ask follow-up questions or investigate at what's on the tool bench, then you can do that. But like, you don't need to tell them what's on the tool bench, right? You just like, there's a tool bench with some stuff on it and an elf corpse, right?
So here's what I've done in the boxed text in the book of 12 adventures that I'm writing since you gave me this feedback. Every room has a 3-sentence description now. The first is like, you're in a workshop, you're in a coal mine, you're in a warehouse. The second is, it briefly describes how you know that. There's tools and toys littered all over the place. And then the last sentence is, what makes this room, like, what just happened here? There's two hobgoblins standing guard. There's an elf corpse. There is a pile of something on the floor. So every room description is now 3 sentences. And on the one hand, it's very repetitive. But on the other hand, if I think about usability at the table,
yeah,
it gives the GM way less to read, and now the players can start asking questions, and the GM can just start answering questions.
And if that's not your style, you as the GM can elaborate on that. You know, it's a lot easier to look at 3 bullet points and expand from there than it is to look at a paragraph of text and try to, you know, distill out what the important stuff is.
So here's my last question for you. If you picked up a book of holiday adventures for like $5, and don't misinterpret that, I don't plan to sell this, but if you picked up a book of holiday adventures for $5, hypothetically, and this adventure was in it, would you have any desire to run this adventure?
Yeah, I think so. I think selling some selling a group on the idea of a Christmas adventure, I think, is a little bit easier than selling somebody on a New Year's or a St. Paddy's adventure, right? Like, hey, there's a cool Christmas dungeon. Let's play this. And the setup that you have is so interesting with like the mirror thing. That's like a very video gamey kind of thing, but I can't remember ever seeing something like that in a tabletop game. Don't correct me, because I'm sure, dear listener, that there is something out there. I just haven't seen it, but like, it was inventive enough that would immediately shoot to the top of my list.
My inspiration, just so I tell you, is a game that I have never actually beaten, but that I've started about 150 times, which is the third Zelda game. What's it called? Link something? The Super Nintendo Zelda game.
Link to the Past?
Where it has the Shadow Realm and stuff?
Yeah.
Link to the Past. I grew up with Sega. Kids, I didn't grow up with Nintendo, so that game where it was the same maps but Shadow or Night or whatever was my inspiration for the mirror image, and also just the fact that I wanted to have Krampus. And at first the adventure was just going to be 14 rooms of Krampus's, you know, coal mines or whatever, and like killing Krampus and like getting to the end and killing the boss monster. But I was like, oh, this is so boring after like the seventh room. And that's when I had the idea, wait, let's join Krampus and Santa kind of at this dimensional rift. Let's join them back to back. That way you see the juxtaposition of Santa and Krampus back to back. And that's when it came together for me.
One thing you didn't have in your notes, but I wanted to mention to you, a piece of feedback that you learned from, you started me right in this adventure. You didn't, you didn't start me in town poking around trying to get an adventure hook. You said you've been on the trail of this aurora in the sky, and you followed it, and eventually you've arrived at this workshop. Boom. I'm like, cool. Like that was a very, very powerful start. And especially for like a one-off holiday dungeon, it's like, just freaking start them there, you know. Like, yep. Don't hide the cool Christmas stuff you made, you know. Yeah,
we said this two episodes ago, but I think we said it really well then, and it bears repeating now. If all the players agree, if everyone understands they're showing up for a dungeon crawl, then start in the freaking dungeon.
Yep.
Because you'll have that one player who wants to negotiate the price of ale. All right, so lessons learned here. Shorten up your room descriptions. Get it out as fast as you can. That doesn't mean talk fast. That means say fewer words. That way, if they want to know more, they can ask questions, they being your players. So shorten your room descriptions.
Yeah, fit it in a tweet.
Absolutely. Oh, that's great advice. The next is, we said this last time about St. Paddy's, that a good theme really helps you fill the dungeon. But a great theme, like the whole mirror image thing, for me, once I came up with that, everything wrote itself. Like, that was the hurdle. And once I cleared that hurdle, the room descriptions just kind of appeared on the page. The monsters appeared on the page. I got a lot of content written very quickly once I had landed like the theme that I was super happy to explore.
And just to tag on to that, I mean, I've found in preparing across every game I've played, coming up with a cool idea is like 80% of the work, and then filling it in from there like is fun, you know. But, you know, you can't rush that good idea.
Yeah, some of my best adventures have been like, I want to have them play Frozen, but I want to see how far I can go before they figure it out. And then, boom, that's your theme, and everything comes together based on that. Anyway, and then lastly, we said this last time, but it bears repeating, goals are key. It's not just that I started you in the dungeon. It's that I started you in the dungeon with the goal of figuring out why the red aurora in the sky. And then as you got into the dungeon to see that these monsters had invaded, obviously your goal at that point was to save Santa and figure out what was causing this invasion. So player motivation or player character motivation is key to give them a reason to go through your dungeon.
Yeah, I think that's all really well said. And if you'll mind indulging me, I have two very stupid pun ideas for the name of this adventure, if you don't want to go with Krampus's Revenge.
Ooh, I want to hear your pun ideas.
All right, how about Claws and Effect?
With the mirror image, I really like that one.
Yeah, that's way better than my second one, which is Treat Yo Elf.
I am a huge fan of Parks and Rec, but Claws and Effect with the whole mirror, and Santa Claus caused all this.
It's true. Claws and Effect, yeah.
Oh, Claws and Effect. Do I spell it AWS, or do I spell it like Santa Claus?
I think you gotta spell it like Santa Claus. I mean, usually the title's only for the GM. Just give them a little fun, right?
That's fair. Santa, yeah. So like clause, like Santa Claus, clause in effect.
Yep.
Sold. That is the name for this adventure now. All right.
All right.
Thank you for listening, everyone.
Take care. Bye-bye.
People call them postmortems, evaluations, appraisals, reviews, retrospectives. We call them lessons learned, and we're sharing ours with you.